Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Extraordinary Family Life Podcast. We're your hosts, Greg and Rachel Denning. Today, we are continuing the discussion from last episode. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, man, make sure you get a listen on that one. This is so relevant and so real and so powerful. And we feel it. We feel it so poignantly because we get to work with so many moms and dads. Really daily, we're working with moms or dads, and we hear of the things that work and the things that don't. And we've studied voraciously for decades. We've experimented a ton ourselves and gotten the results that just work. And we see this, and we see the pain and hurt. And so the man, when we see that, we get fired up and think this has to be shared and corrected.
Well, because we have been so intentional and deliberate, we have found a lot of things that do work. But not that we have all the answers. We definitely don't, because we're still constantly looking for answers for the next problems, right, that we're facing. But we have found a lot of answers.
Which is probably the answer, actually. The answer is to keep looking for answers.
Yeah, right. Because you're going to continually face problems. Life is essentially a series of problems you face and overcome. That's what it is. And that's a good thing. That's an okay thing. So as long as you continually look for answers, you're going to find them, and you're going to, more importantly, develop the skill of problem solving, which is how you actually become a better parent, become a better spouse, become a better person. Like it's actually becoming a problem solver that helps you to do those things.
And that ultimately probably is the only way to effectively create a long-lasting, stable environment where the whole family can feel grounded and stable,
right,
independent of location. Whether you move and wander the earth or stay in one place, you're solving problems. And in many cases, solving them for good. Like, we solved that problem and it's done. So it's a long lasting solution. But then I loved what you're saying is, like, it keeps changing. And ultimately, every week your kids are different.
Mm-hmm.
We don't often see that, but every week they're older.
Their brain has developed more, et cetera.
In a week.
Yeah.
But we don't think that, because you're right there with it. All you gotta do, somebody who goes away for 6 months and comes back and they look at your kids, they're like, wow, you guys have grown a lot. You've changed. And the change is palpable or obvious.
And it's not just physical either. It's mental,
right,
emotional.
But we don't always see that either. Right. So the inner child is changing as much as the outer child.
Yeah.
But it's not always visible. We have to remind ourselves these kids are changing. And so even something that didn't work well or worked last week may not work this week,
right,
or vice versa.
Well, and this idea of becoming a problem solver, at least for me, it's something that helps me feel like I have a sense of control. In the world that's chaotic, in life that's chaotic, in parenting, marriage, all of these things that can feel chaotic and overwhelming at times, knowing that I can solve problems makes me feel a sense of control. Because I think ultimately that's the only thing we do have control over. We can't control what problems come our way or what we face or what circumstances or whatever happens to us. We can't control that, but we can control whether or not we have the ability to solve problems. And having that sense, and I think especially in our marriage, that's very grounding to me, to think, you know what, this might suck right now, but I know that we can solve problems. We can find answers because we've done it before. We can keep doing it. And so that always feels so reassuring to me to know we're problem solvers, right? And I think ultimately that's the biggest sense of power and source of confidence for me, is to think we can solve problems. So it doesn't matter what we do or where we go or what happens to us, we'll be able to find answers and solve problems.
I think it would be difficult, if not impossible, to overemphasize what you just said. It's the ability to solve problems that gives one confidence, assurance, a sense of certainty,
competence,
a sense of control, the competence. It dispels feelings of anxiety, fear, doubt, hopelessness.
Mm-hmm.
Like that all dissipates because of the ability to solve problems.
Right.
Not, and I think it's important to really emphasize that, not that you have the solution and all the answers.
Right.
Because you won't.
Yeah.
You're going to face something new all the time. You will not, you cannot possibly have all the answers. And so people get unbelievably anxious or afraid or doubtful, fearful, whatever. They get into this learned hopelessness because they think they have to have the answers, but they won't. They can't. And so it's not having the answers. It's having the ability to find the answers. It's the ability to solve problems, not having the solution to every problem ready at hand.
Right.
That's going to be the game changer. And that's why our life is really free from anxiety, fear, doubt, discouragement, hopelessness. Not that we have all the answers, but we know how to find answers.
Exactly. And not that we that our entire life is perfect, because I think maybe sometimes people think, oh, well, everything's just so much easier for you, or you have better kids, or you have fewer problems. And in some ways, that is definitely true because of our increasing ability to solve problems, which makes some problems just go away. That's the case. But there's always other problems. There's always more problems that you're facing. And so it's not that our life is problem-free or our parenting is problem-free, but that we have the ability to solve the problems that confront us. And so I think that's the biggest parenting skill you can gain.
Hands down.
Very often I feel like in our coaching sessions, or people ask questions online or wherever they ask us questions, it's almost like they're asking, they want a tip or a trick or something, like, hey, if my kid does this, what do I do? Like, what, you know, let me insert this little answer to this problem and then I solve the problem. And we're always kind of like trying to explain to them, well, that's not the answer. Like, you can't, not all kids are the same. Not all parents are the same. Not all relationships are the same. So something I can do with my kid who's this certain age who does that same thing, it's probably going to look different than what you can do, because I have a different relationship with them. Hopefully I have invested more in that relationship and I have this emotional bank account or reserve to fall back on. And so I'm able to do different things that you may not be able to do because you don't have that bank account, you know, that emotional bank account. And so the best thing we can teach our clients, that this is the approach we take, is to how to solve the problem. They have to start from wherever they are and say, what is it that I need to do to most likely, one, make this relationship better so that I have more influence with this child, so that I can do this thing that would actually make a difference. So right. It's like a multi-layer process. And you have to be able to think through that and understand that process in order for it to be as effective for someone else who already has these things in place, if that makes sense.
Yep. And those what if scenarios, or, you know, this situation or this case, they could literally be infinite.
Yeah. And so absolutely.
You couldn't possibly
give all the answers. There's so many different scenarios that are a possibility. Where I think what people want, parents often want, like, if your child does A, B, or C, you give a timeout. If their child does C, D, E, F, you do this, right? And that just doesn't work.
Nope.
That doesn't work because the individuals involved are so varied and you know, different in so many ways.
Right. And in fact, we would lean away even from
a one size fits all
waiting
approach.
Well, absolutely away from that, but even waiting until something happens and then coming up with some kind of consequence. Yes. We're going to step way back and say, how do we prevent the vast majority of problems, discipline problems, behavior problems, physical health problems, mental emotional health problems, spiritual problems? Like, we're going to prevent all of that by focusing on helping things go right, helping things be right.
Exactly.
So we're going to weigh upstream and prevent the vast majority. And we've done that.
Well, I would say that is our major parenting style and approach. It's preventative instead of reactive. We're not reacting to behavior issues and then disciplining or enforcing consequences. That to us is the last resort. Like, that's what you reserve for when, like, oops, I totally messed up here. It's gotten to this. Now I need a disciplinary action. That's the last resort. For us, our parenting approach is very preventative. We are going to take actions ahead of time, predicting potential problems, and then making sure that it never gets to that point because we invest in the relationship, or we do some sort of intervention, or, you know, whatever it is. We're willing to do whatever it takes to prevent problems from happening by investing early on so that it never becomes an issue.
A late response from us would be responding to the earliest signs and symptoms that something's off.
Exactly.
And even if we've gotten there, we're like, oh, shoot, we haven't been investing enough with this kid.
Haven't been paying enough attention to this kid. You know? And that's with the slightest thing that starts to go off.
Generally, when you get into serious problems inside the family, it's because there's been some kind of
chronic neglect.
Yeah. And it's been going on for a while. And so that turns into a big problem. And the problem almost always is just, it's a vehicle that a person chooses to try to meet
a need.
Yeah. So any rebellious behavior or crazy behavior, foolish behavior, angry, you know, explosive, whatever it is, it's just a vehicle that an individual is choosing, mostly subconsciously, to try to meet a need. So, and that's basically, it's an indicator that things have been off for quite a while.
Yeah.
And they need to be adjusted.
Well, and one way I like to think about this, to give a more concrete example, is that in any relationship, this is true with your spouse, this is true with your children, anyone else you might need to interact with, that for the most part, you have to have this balance of positive and negative interactions with them. The more negative interactions you have with them, the more strained your relationship is going to be. And we all get that, like, oh, that makes sense. And yet on a daily basis, we very rarely act that out. We're constantly, and a negative interaction, well, that's the other thing too, is that the more strained your relationship is, the more likely it is that your interactions are going to be perceived as negative by that person. Even in my case as a mom, asking my children to do something can be a negative withdrawal as opposed to a positive deposit into their emotional bank account, right? So if I ask them to do something, I'm essentially making them a withdrawal. And if I'm constantly asking them to do something all day long, and then especially if I move to getting upset or yelling or nagging, I'm just making withdrawals all day long.
Sometimes on completely overdrawn accounts.
Yeah, on accounts that are already overdrawn. And so if that's the approach that you're taking to your parenting, where you're making nonstop withdrawals by asking your kids to do something all the time and then nagging them about it, it's no wonder you're going to have these strained relationships that result in outbursts and rebellion and all of this negative behavior because you're not balancing that with positive deposits. You have to have an abundance of positive deposits in order to even be able to do something as simple as ask your child to do something for you.
So that then is the fundamental framework of effective parenting and an extraordinary family life, is that your main focus is making deposits into the relationship accounts.
Exactly.
With your spouse and your children. And this isn't, oh, we do this for a time and then it's over. It is ongoing,
right.
Always you're making deposits.
One of the biggest challenges, I think, with being a parent is because from our point of view, we've been making deposits since you got pregnant, right? I sacrificed my time, energy, my food. Like, I had to eat different. I had to sleep different. I experienced sleepless nights before you even born. And then sleepless nights after you're born, feeding, caring, like it was this huge deposit of time and energy. And so you think that's huge. Like, I've got millions in the bank for this. This kid owes me. He doesn't even know. All the times I sat there, my back aching, my arms burning, just holding you while you slept so that you could be comfortable. Like, everything goes on and on. And so you think you have millions in the bank. But from their point of view, you don't. Because they don't remember any of that. And they won't fully understand that sacrifice until they have their own children. I mean, that's a long-term deposit that won't pay off for years, right? And so, in essence, every day with a kid, you're starting from zero.
Yep.
You wake up in the morning, you've got nothing in that account. And that might seem harsh. You might think, that's not fair. I've given my life to this kid. Why am I starting with zero? And the reason is because they're kids. They don't know.
Scoreboards reset.
Exactly. And so
I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but I think it's very similar for women. Women's scoreboards reset. And so if you're a man and you're listening to this, like, you can't be like, babe, when we got married, I told you I loved you. If anything changes,
I told you yesterday, right?
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Last week count. I said you're beautiful. Gosh. And like, no, every set's that they operate on a different scoreboard. So do kids.
Yeah, exactly. And so you have to remember that every day. That's why in our preventative parenting approach, the very first thing we do every single morning with every single child is we make a deposit with a hug, a kiss, a cuddle. Like, that's how we greet the day. We good morning. We're happy. We're excited. We hug them. We ask them how they slept. We talk to them. We cuddle with them if necessary. That's how every day starts,
yep.
No matter what.
And we luckily early on noticed, like, oh, wait a minute. Like, there's little things that happen regularly that could be and actually are withdrawals. So we're like, let's remove, you know, the leaks from the bucket. Let's remove any unnecessary withdrawals. And it was interesting. I don't even remember where we came across this, but it was early on. I realized, like, man, we were saying no all the time. The words no and stop mm-hmm. are like probably the most common words of young parents. And I don't know if you read it somewhere or came across it somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, a kid will hear the word no so many
times. I think Wayne Dyer might have said it somewhere. Yeah,
tens of thousands of times. We're like, man, we got to stop doing that. And so when our oldest kids were really young, we're just like, okay, let's not say no anymore. Let's not do negatives. Let's not be going around like the vast majority of young parents. No, stop. No, no, leave me. Stop. Don't, mm-hmm. no, don't do that. And it's just negative, 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 negative.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought, man, let's revert this. Let's take a completely different approach so our kids don't grow up with this literally a mental framework of
negativity.
No, don't stop.
Right.
And so even this is a simple strategy. It works like magic. And some of our coaching clients are doing it right now. One couple I work with, they're literally doing a challenge as a couple to not say the words no or stop.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like already, like, we're seeing these massive changes. The kids, and we didn't like tell the kids what we're doing. We just noticed their behavior is different.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of saying no, I kept telling them, they're like, well, how do you do that? How do you not say no? And I'm like, well, say yes, but.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've always been really great at that, Rachel. You're like, the kids come, can I do this? Yes. Have you done this first?
Right. I'll say yes if you have done this. And so it's simply a reframing. It's not that I'm allowing them to do whatever right. or have whatever. Like, can I have a cookie? Yes. Well, we don't have cookies at our house.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm not just allowing whatever, but I'm changing the framing. So it becomes a positive with conditions as opposed. And usually that's what parents mean. They're like, no, you can't because you haven't done this. We're just changing it around. Yes, you can if you have done this. And the way that that kids take that and feel about it, it's way different. Like, it changes the energy and everything. It changes their desire.
Their paradigm for life.
Oh, absolutely it does. And so it's simply a reframing of that into yes, but, or yes, if, or yes, you know.
Or whatever, our kids will say, hey, Dad, can we get some ice cream? Let's go home and make some healthy ice cream is my response.
Yeah. Or, instead of, no, hey, we can't get ice cream.
Can we grab these chips or these cookies? I'm like, let's do this. Let's go over here and we're going to buy some berries and go, let's go make something like a cobbler. That's right. You just divert it. So
say,
it's like, no.
Yes. Nah, if there's nah. no seed oils.
Right. Yeah. Chips, right? Sure. If look on the ingredients real quick. If you find healthy ingredients, we'll grab some.
Well, and I will even do that intentionally. Like, in my mind, I know the ingredients are not good, but I won't just say no. I'll be like, well, read the ingredients, tell me. And they know at this point what ingredients are okay. And so if the ingredients aren't good, then they themselves are the ones that are like, nope, can't get it.
Yeah.
So you're teaching them to see the world in a different way and to not feel like you're controlling them and you're telling them, no, you can't do this. No, you can't have that. No, that's not okay. They are more autonomous because, especially if you reframe something, can I have a snack? Yes, if you've done your morning routine. That's easy. Now they're in control and they get to get the thing they want, which is what they're after, by taking positive action in the world. It's really a transformative approach. It's made
huge.
All the difference yep. in our family.
And I'll do challenges with some of my coaching clients, be like, hey, look, when you go on vacation or you're going on a family trip or road trip or something, or just this weekend, be the yes man. Be the yes man and just Agree. So often we're just saying no because we're tired or we're worried about something. We're thinking about something else. We're distracted. We're worried about, we're operating in a scarcity mindset, whatever. I know one of my clients, he took a big family trip, and I'm like, dude, and it's interesting when you talk to him, you're like, yeah, family trips are mostly stressful and expensive, and we just can't wait to get back to be done with it. And I'm like, no, man, they should be amazing. They should be incredible. I'm like, say yes. And so he's like, okay, I'm gonna say yes. And they were like, yeah, I can play games. And where he would always be like, no, he's like, yeah, let's go. And like, we're gonna do this. Okay, let's go for it. Right, can we stop for pizza? Sure. Hey, Dad, can we stop for gelato? Yeah, let's do it. And then they're like, can we go hot air ballooning? He's like, and it's like, it was one of the most epic family experiences and memories, just really special.
Right.
He's like, because I just was saying yes. And he's like, it just changed everything. And yeah, it cost me a little bit more, but he's like, I had a better time. I was
Right.
more pleasant. I wasn't fighting. And it's like, it was just such a vastly different experience.
Well, and I think a lot of people's initial response to that would be like, well, that's a lot of money. That costs more money. You know, that's, I can't do that. I can't afford that.
Or I'm not teaching my kids self-restraint
Right.
and discipline. They're
Exactly.
going to be
That too.
gluttons.
Right. But when you learn to say yes, I think that's also a part of the problem-solving approach and mentality, especially for you as the parent, the one worrying about the cost of it. Well, if you're a problem solver, you can figure out how to pay for it. That's the point. And even if you put it on a credit card, you can figure out how to pay it off. That's the part of problem solving that's so empowering, is you don't have to say no to all these things because of your fear or your lack mentality. You can say yes, knowing you can figure it out. You can find a way to earn that money. You can find a way to pay for these things that bring joy and pleasure and happiness to your family. And that's a good thing. I'm telling you, the experience that you have when you take that approach is so vastly different than the one where you go around saying no to everything because you can't afford it or because you're going to be spoiled or whatever.
Well, I can hear some people right now saying, well, we have standards in our family and we're not just going to say yes to everything. Like we want our kids to be disciplined and we get in this mindset, and I get it. I used to be there.
Right, we were there. That
And
was us.
we get in this mindset of like, I want my kids to go without. I
Yeah.
want them to struggle and suffer because life is hard. I don't want them to be like, I don't want them
Excited
to
about
have
everything. Just kidding.
entitled. Yeah. Why should they be excited all the time? I had a rough life. I had a rough childhood. They don't even know. They're so spoiled and all this stuff, right? But the problem is
And we're not downplaying the danger. There can be
massive. And
danger
that's
to
where I was
that.
going right
Yeah,
now. I'm
that's
like,
where we want to
we're
really
in no
just
way saying like we just
give your
say
kids
yes to
whatever you
whatever.
want.
That they ask for whatever. And like, sure. I'm like, hey, can I do this horrible, stupid thing? Yeah, let's go ahead. We actually still have crazy, crazy high standards in our family. I hope you guys, if you're new to us, maybe you don't know that, but if you've been listening for a while, you should know we have insanely high standards in our family about what we eat and the media we consume and how we live our lives and even our language. And we have unbelievably high standards. They're like, there's no insulting or mockery
Well,
or
and absolutely high standards about entitlement and privilege and
and doing crazy hard things. Initially, you might think, man, if I say yes to everything, our kids are going to have no self-discipline. They're not going to be able to do hard things. They're just going to be lazy and weak and whatever. And we're saying it's the opposite. So, but we still have massively high standards and we don't even have to say no. We'll just say, like I was telling you before, it's like, hey, can we try this? Can we do this? Let's do this instead. Let's,
Well,
well, let's, and they're like, well, that's, and oh, we'll even say things like, well, let's play that out. Like, that behavior, what would that lead to? Is that genuinely the kind of person you want to be? Is that the kind of life you want to live? Like you could try those
right.
things. And so we're just constantly leveling up. And so it's not a no. And then as soon as the kid's not with the parents, they're like, I'm gonna binge on whatever that thing is. I'm gonna
The
go for it.
forbidden.
And that's why you see like college kids or people when they move out, they just tank and destroy their lives. Because the only reason they actually had any quote restraint was because the parent was there,
Right.
no. Had this really strict control on them. And so you actually remove the fight early on. And you're like, well, let's walk through this. Let's talk through why we don't do those things. And the standards rise and they're self-fulfilling. imposed instead of parent imposed.
Right. And I think it's very fascinating also because I've seen it, especially in our teenagers, where because we say yes to a lot of things, they actually have this increased sense of gratitude. Now, that's also intentional because we are very deliberate about pointing out how blessed they are, how good their lives are. And, you know, when they interact with other people, especially, they realize that. But it's like they do have this sense, this increased sense of gratitude, and they're always expressing their gratitude to us for even the smallest things we do. You know, thank you for this, thank you for that.
And that drives responsibility.
Right, up. And it exactly, and it totally does. And so because we say yes to a lot of things, they have more gratitude and appreciation and respect for us because they recognize that we're providing a lot of these opportunities for them that they wouldn't have on their own. Now, the other side of it is too, absolutely, we encourage and require them at times to pay for their own things.
So, perfect example. So we just bought tickets to go hiking in the French Alps.
Yes, and because and you're like, training for
Kilimanjaro,
a trip we're doing to Kilimanjaro.
Which you guys should come with us on those trips. Yeah. Oh, so epic. So, but I'm taking the kids, just me and two of my teens, and we're going to go hike in Switzerland and France. And off the charts, like that. That just, it makes money.
Which is why we live in Portugal, because it's cheap for you to go do that.
So there it is. It's actually an inexpensive weekend trip. And they're like, can we go? And I'm like, yes. Are you guys willing to chip in a little bit? And so they both are like, yep. Right. And so that's a perfect example where it's actually inexpensive. We could have covered it, but I'm like, yes, but yes. And yes, will you? And they know it's such a rad experience, and I'm covering the bulk of the cost. Can they chip in? Yeah, sure. And there's a perfect example there where it's not just pure entitlement. It's not just whatever. Like they're paying a price. They're working hard. They're working out hard.
They're training.
For Kilimanjaro. So it's this great blessing, and they're putting in the work.
Right. And because, you know, from our perspective, this is how we educate our kids. You know, some people think, well, I'm not going to pay for my kids to go on these trips and do these things because they haven't earned it. They don't deserve it. And all these, you know, all these excuses that we hear. But for us, this is one of the preventative investments that we make that we've been doing for their entire life. We're like, yeah, we're going to pay for you to go to Kilimanjaro because it's part of your education. It requires you to work out hard and to get in shape and to discipline yourself and to, you know, all of these steps that take to get to that point are part of the development of your character that are just, it's just amazing because it's all part of that preventative approach that is focused on who you're becoming instead of what you're fighting against.
Right.
Which too often the parenting dynamic is that you're fighting against what your parents are trying to enforce on you instead of working towards some goal you have together to climb Kilimanjaro or whatever it is. Another example too is, you know, we also, as part of the educational approach, we are very much investing in their physical, mental, emotional development. That includes buying things like, you know, we just bought a trampoline because, well, I wanted to jump because it's good for your lymphatic system and all this stuff. And, you know, the kids wanted to jump and we'll get them different things. But, you know, we were at one of our favorite stores here in Europe, Decathlon, and our 9-year-old daughter wanted a bike. But it was one of those things where at the time we both felt like, nope, we're not going to buy her a bike. That's something she needs to earn. And so we told her, we said, yes, you can get a bike if you earn it. And at first, you know, that seemed really hard and overwhelming. And she was even in tears about it. And she was like, but I want to get it now. And I want, you know, and we were like, we talked her through the whole thing. Like, we understand, but, you know, you have to earn these things for yourself. And she finally was able to grasp onto the idea that, one, it was a possibility that she could earn that much money. I think it's like 200 euros. And now she's been working on it. She's earned over 100, I think she's up to like 125 euros.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. But she's just steadily been working away at earning this thing. I think it's, so far it's been, you know, a couple of months, but she is working on earning it. And so you think, okay, yeah, that's what
so
I want.
So formative.
But I think that the difference here is that if our approach is no, I'm not getting you any of these things, you have to earn them yourself. it's very different than this, yes, but there are some things you have to earn yourself.
Yep.
It's more of a forward motion, forward energy. You know, I'm hoping.
It's positive versus negative, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. And so it makes kids, I think, more willing and eager to put in that work when they realize that they live in a world of possibility. And I think that's what saying yes does for kids. It puts them in this mindset of possibility.
And like, that we things live are in possible. An abundant universe.
And we live in a fun world, yeah. And an exciting world where there's so many things to do. There's more things to do than we could ever do. But if we say yes to the opportunities that come our way, it teaches them that that's a way to live in the world and to move forward in the world. And so it helps them to be more eager to be willing to take on those opportunities and to earn those opportunities when they come their way, if that makes sense.
And I think one of the most fixed mindsets in humanity is simply, well, I can't do that. I can't afford that. There's no way I can do that. Instead of, how could I do that?
Well, and that's the problem. That's what we're modeling for our kids when we say no all the time.
Yep.
We're basically showing them that, no, these things aren't possible for us or our family.
So then later on, as they're adults, and probably you adults who are listening have experienced this yourself, this immediate reaction, mental reaction of, I can't do that.
Right.
No, there's no way. No, I can't. And you just dismiss awesome opportunities with this immediate thought of, I can't do that.
Right.
We can't afford that. There's no way that's going to happen. Money doesn't grow on trees. Like all these responses we all heard as kids and still pass on. Instead, we want to say, well, how could you?
Right. Which that's exactly how we're conditioning and training our children to think. And, you know, and even to us still, sometimes we're kind of like, oh, we're training them to say yes to everything, you know, but it's actually empowering for all of us to say, okay, let's see if it's a possibility. And sometimes it's, you know, logistically not a possibility. And that's a part of the world too. You know, you can say yes to things, but then if you can't actually figure out the details or the dates don't work or this or that or the other, that's also real.
It's not legit. And that's,
you can't,
that's actually,
say yes and do everything right in the world because it's just not possible.
So instead of saying an immediate no, say, well, let's look into it real quick. Let's just kind
that's
of play this out.
Approach.
And you start doing a little bit of research and you realize, ah, man, okay, this is what it entails. What do you guys think? And they'll often be like, yeah, man, I'd rather do something else
right. That's
just as fun or even funner and logistically is not so insane.
Yeah. And sometimes it will eliminate itself through that practice. Even this morning, we are going to Kilimanjaro. And we're trying to figure out if, specifically for the teens, if they stay and do a humanitarian project or if they just come back. Or we even brought up going to an island off Tanzania, Zanzibar. And we quickly looked into the details and kind of were like, well, for the amount it's going to cost us, we're not sure it's going to be worth it, especially since you're mostly going to see beaches. And we do live by the beach in Portugal, you know, so, you know, maybe not worth it for this extra cost. And so, but it was by saying yes and being open to the possibility that you have this process of elimination where you then say, actually, that's not what we would choose. We would choose something else.
Yeah. So powerful.
So, but it's being open to this that you teach them, again, possibility to think through things and then to, you know, weigh pros and cons. But the point is, they're learning to do that rather than you doing that process, which is often what's happened. The parent does the process independently
or doesn't,
and then says, gives the ultimatum, yep, like, no, we're not. And so then that creates a battle and this battle of the wills because they don't feel that they're making the decision,
right,
and they're not. They're not being a part of those decision-making processes to learn how to think, to learn how to come to conclusions, to learn how to confront the world. And instead what they're doing is constantly fighting you.
Exactly. You become the
enemy. You're making the laws.
Yep. And you become the barrier that's unnecessary. And the last thing you want to do is be the barrier to your children.
Right. I mean, I think I've told this before, but, you know, my own parents were very, especially my dad was very much that way. Like, this is the, and he had gone through his own process of discovering things and learning things. And so he, you know, thought, I have the truth and I'm going to tell you what it is and how to do it. make your life easier, right? That's what we think as parents. I'm trying to make your life easier here because I found the answers already. Let me just tell you what they are and you can follow my advice. But it had the opposite effect for me, where I then rebelled. And I remember vividly that it wasn't until I had moved out and I was on my own. And then finally I felt like, my dad's not here to tell me what to do anymore.
Why am I still
making these choices? Because you literally, as a teenager, and I think adults still do this too, that very often we make choices that are simply the opposite of what the person telling us to do wants us to do. And then when we finally are able to think clearly for ourselves and think, well, wait, what do I actually want? Well, what I wanted was actually what my dad wanted for me. But I wasn't able or willing to make those choices for myself until I was out from underneath his thumb and finally was able to think, what do I want? So all we're trying to do as parents is give our kids that space while they're in our home.
Mm-hmm. And we want
Here to give you the rules. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to help you make decisions on your own, but ultimately they're your decisions.
And we want to have very, very high standards. Personal standards, family standards. We want to have very
cleanliness
high
standards, like whatever it is you want.
Right.
You can have those standards.
The morals, the ethics, the values. I love that word. The values we hold are insanely high. Like comparative to most of the world, we're very, very high. But we are leading our children to those things and inviting and persuading and influencing them to make those decisions on their own, to embrace those values and standards for themselves. Mm-hmm. And the more we try to force and enforce, the more we try to be strict and make it happen, the more likely they are to resist or conform, but then later just dismiss. Like yes. They may go along, depending on the kid's personality. They'll either fight you completely and you'll have a battle, or the kid will just acquiesce and they'll go along. But later on, a couple decades down the road, they're going to be like, I'm dumping that crap, because it was never their own. Mm-hmm. They never chose it for themselves. They just went along because you were forcing or enforcing or insisting, whatever it was. So what we're saying here is we have to lead our children there, mm-hmm. and help them confront the world, make choices on their own, go through the whole thinking process. We're empowering them to become superb adults. Mm-hmm. And all of that is built on this ability to solve problems. And I wanted to make another comparison just so it really settles in. Maybe two, actually. The ability, the physical ability and earning ability. If your physical ability is just phenomenal, like you're just in fantastic
energy
shape
levels
and health, you eat well, you sleep well, you exercise
mental,
all the
emotional
time, then whatever comes your way, like anything from a fighting situation to a rescue situation to just the demands of life.
Well, sometimes it's just carrying your kids because they're tired.
They're exhausted. You got to carry them a long way.
I see that so often where parents, you go out, say you're even traveling the world, This happens to us all the time when we're traveling. We just flew back to Portugal from the United States. We landed in Dublin at 5 a.m., which was essentially midnight U.S. time. Our daughter, who's 6, is exhausted.
She was done.
As the grown-ups, and this carries over to our teens because we've modeled it for them, you have to be the one holding it together. Like, you have to be able to carry them as necessary and carry the stuff and carry, like, you have to carry the load. And you've always been amazing at doing that, right? And leading out for especially our boys, but even our daughters do it. We have to carry the load because we can't be little children. And this often makes, for many people we've seen, their travel experience that much more miserable because as adults, they can't handle it.
Right.
They can't handle the discomfort and the tiredness and the burden. And so because they can't carry the load, it makes the entire family's experience less enjoyable. But when you can rise to the occasion, when you can just be like, you know what? This is what it's like. This is where we're at. This is what we can do about it. And I had some conversations with that with my 9-year-old, especially because, she was obviously exhausted. And I, you talk through it with her of like, Yeah, I understand. It's not fun. None of us want to be sitting here in this chair at 5 a.m. when we didn't sleep. We want to be laying in a bed. We want to be home. But I'm like, this is part of travel. This is what travel is like. And if we want to go visit these places and see our family and do these things and all this, this is what is required. And you're able to have that conversation with them. And so that they, it's not me getting upset and saying, stop acting like this. This is unacceptable. Just deal with it.
Well, and it's, what's important is you were exhausted as well,
oh,
as
absolutely.
Was I.
Right.
You were not operating from your exhaustion.
Exactly.
That's right. Important.
Yeah, absolutely. I had to operate from a higher state of, yes, I am exhausted. These are the types of things I'm telling myself, and I'm telling them to you. So you also learn to think this way. I'm modeling for you how to think about the situation. This is what's required in order for us to do the things that we want to do, because we chose to do this, right? We chose this situation by default, by having chosen to take the trip,
right? And so we all had tons of stuff we were carrying because we brought back so much stuff. So we're carrying all our stuff. And so then when the six-year-old's like, she's like, I'm done.
Which is legitimate. She's
and
six.
You prepare for her to carry her own things and be able to make the walk. And she reaches a point, and kids do that. They reach a point when they're like, done. So I pick her up. So now we have to distribute her weight and the weight of all her belongings across the group. And of course, our 8-year-old son is just he is a beast of a specimen of awesomeness and just has the best attitude. And so he grabbed her bag immediately without even, he's just paying attention. We've taught our kids absolute awareness, situational awareness, self-awareness. He didn't even flinch. He grabbed her bag. I grabbed her and added her to my load. And it was a long haul through that airport. And we just go. So that's an excellent example. I just forgot about that. Of like, if you have physical ability, then you can handle whatever comes. And you don't know what's going to come.
Right.
Like, it can pop out of anywhere at any time. We were driving through the road 2 days ago, and there was a car went off the road into the bush. We get down there, and they're all drunk. Still idiots. It was retarded, but they were in a mess. Really nice BMW in a real mess. And so Kimball and I got down there, and we were able to help them out. There was consequences for their own stupid choices. But I mean, there's been so many instances where we're just out and about, and bam, somebody needs some real physical strength to help, and we've done that so many times. So never know when it's going
to
pop up.
And to me, that's wonderful to help other people. But I think, especially in the context of this conversation, I think where that plays out the most and has the most positive impact is your ability to do that in the family situation.
100%.
Our kids, there's this legend story from when our kids were small, when we went on this 5-mile hike, which, isn't huge, but our children are all small at the time. And it was too much for all of them to handle.
Well, it's because we were in a river in a slot canyon. It wasn't just your ordinary.
Yeah.
There was no trail.
Right. And towards the end, you literally had to carry like 3 kids out.
In the dark.
And that is kind of, to me, representative of this idea that as the father specifically, and moms can do this in their own way, maybe not to the same physical capability, but you have to be able and willing to carry that load so that when others cannot continue, you are carrying them, literally. And that can be physically, that can be mentally, that can be emotionally, that can be spiritually, financially. You're there as the support. If you don't have that, the strength of your family is dependent on you. And if you don't have that strength, your family's not going to have the strength. So if your family is falling apart, it may just be because you're falling apart.
Yep.
So you have to strengthen yourself. And you have to be strong enough to carry the burdens so that you can carry your family. And so more importantly, you're modeling for them how to approach life, how to live life, how to do life.
Exactly. And because we don't know what situations will arise, the asset then is the physical ability, the stamina,
and
the strength.
I think it's also directly connected to the mental, emotional.
Absolutely.
As well, because in a situation like that, and you know this for sure, it's not just the physical capabilities, the mental ability to push through the pain, to be it, to be able to, you know, reach the finish line.
Absolutely. So very often the body can be literally exhausted and the mind says, oh no.
Yeah. You're not done yet.
There's still more.
Exactly.
Road ahead.
And this isn't to in any way say that you have to be this perfect person that, you know, is always strong and happy and whatever, you know.
Although I would say you should always be strong and happy.
Yes. As as much as possible, you absolutely should. And you, that's definitely something you have cultivated. You didn't start out that way. It's something you've cultivated and are able to do. I would say you're there at least 95% of the time, if not more. But the point is, in this process of modeling, you're also modeling for them how to deal with the disappointments, the downs, the ups and downs, the challenges. You know, it's not just being perfect, but it's modeling for them how to work through the hard times.
Yep.
Even the other day, I thought about this because, you know, we do a lot of things, and sometimes that it's a stacking of different issues that result in mixed emotions. And especially for me, I'm more emotional than you are. But I was dealing with a lot of these different things, and we were trying to sort them out, and we were having an intense discussion about it. And afterwards, my daughter was like, Mom, why were you crying? What are you upset about? And I said, and of course I'm explaining to her how this works. I'm like, well, when I get upset, it's usually about lots of different things. It's not just one thing in particular. And she was asking about them, and I explained the different issues. Some of them have to do with my own family that's far away and some health issues they're facing and, you know, lots of different things. And I thought, you know, this important thing is not that I get upset and there's something wrong with that, but that I get upset and I'm able to work through it. We can talk about it. I did some writing about it. And so you're able to stabilize the emotions and come back to the, you know, the higher level emotions. And so you're essentially showing this process of like, yeah, there's going to be times when you get upset, and for valid reasons, right? If you're upset because someone has, you know, life-threatening disease or whatever, and that's a bigger piece in all of these other things, that's a valid reason to be upset, right? Mm-hmm. But what do we do about it? That's the question. That's what we're trying to model. What do we do about it? How do we work through this? How do we move forward and not just stay stuck in these lower level emotions that then carry, you know, then affect all of my relationships with my children, right? I'm not allowing it to just stay with me and move through my day and my weeks and months. And I'm now an unpleasant person to be around because I'm
stuck
in all these emotions, right? It's having the emotion is one thing, but being stuck in it for days, weeks, or months.
Or
that's
decades.
A problem. Or decades for some people, right?
No, that's legit.
Oh, absolutely.
And what you're describing is a skill. It's an ability.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Again, that's what I guess we're just continually emphasizing during this episode. It's these abilities that have to be cultivated and developed. And you're working on them so your kids see you working on them. Mm-hmm. And they usually just follow along and they join, even though they can tell. Training is always challenging. If it's done well, training is difficult. It's hard. That's how you get stronger, by doing things that are beyond your current ability. So mm-hmm. it's uncomfortable.
Right.
And the kids see it. And how you handle it, you have to make it, I don't know how to emphasize this enough, you have to make good habits attractive.
Yes.
Like, it has to be appealing. Like, your kids see you just sweating and struggling and suffering, and they look over and they're like, I want some of that, right? That's tough, but it has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can see it physically, right? If you want to get stronger, you've got to exercise hard, and that's uncomfortable. But it's the same mentally and emotionally, and processing emotions,
mm-hmm.
and dealing with relationships, and facing your fears, and chasing your dreams, and dealing with your fixed mindsets and your unresolved issues.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to see you walk through that effectively. And it has to be attractive so they go, how I want
to
do life.
Right, and to have the outcome be something that seems positive. Because while, especially in this case here, you know, they saw me upset, but then they also saw me come out resolved,
yep.
and at peace.
And they see
it wasn't
you...
a fake thing. It right. was legit, like, okay, I worked through it. It took us maybe an hour. And then I was at peace.
And they see sincerely. You at peace most of the time. So they know you're not putting on some facade. It's not some joke. It's not some mask. Man, parents think they can pull the wool over on their kids. They wear these little masks around. The kids see right through it. And they don't say anything necessarily, but they're just like, give me a break. I can tell you're putting on a little act here. And they know when you're a hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
And they know when you're a charlatan and a fraud. And they know if it's real or not.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is, cultivate the skills and the ability to make it real.
Mm-hmm.
Be real. Like your ability to actually solve problems. Your ability to handle hard things. Your physical ability to be able to work all day and then come home and still help with your spouse and still show up for your kids. Mm-hmm. Whether it's they want to jump on the trampoline or play games or help with their projects or their homework. And then your spouse has more things for you to do. And then like you got to have all the energy and stamina and bandwidth mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically.
Yeah. And I mean, this happens to us every day. This isn't just, you know, like stuff we're making up. This is literally our days. Even just, we bought the trampoline like last week. And of course, the girls just wanted to jump and jump and jump. And they want daddy to jump with them. And you had gone, I think,
They have boundless energy. It is unreal.
And I think you had gone to play volleyball because you're on a volleyball team here in Portugal. And so you were just spent.
I was jumped
and
out.
Exhausted. And you'd already jumped two or three times that day. Yep. But of course, we challenge each other. And so he came out from working and the girls were like, Dad, let's go jump again. And you were like, no, I am so exhausted.
I can barely
stand
up. I don't
want to go jump. And I said, Greg, you're encouraging the girls to not jump on the trampoline. And of course, you just ran right out there and jumped again.
Dropped my phone right there in the hallway floor, took off running and raced them to the tramp and jumped until I was ready to fall off the tramp. But that's how you show up. That's how you do it. And it's all built. All of this, you guys, is built on ability. Time we'll talk about, because we're going to get to finances, your earning ability. Your greatest asset is your earning ability. So even if you lost everything, if you lost a job, got laid off, I mean, you go through all these scenarios, the what-if scenarios of finances, your greatest asset is your earning ability.
Financial asset.
Yeah, your greatest financial asset.
Because I would say one of your greatest assets is your energy levels and health, of course.
Yeah, and that's a skill. That's an ability. Yeah. Like because we're all energy generators, but most of us are walking around like we're energy victims.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us are energy vampires, or we live with vampires, or whatever, or we're just sabotaging ourselves because we're doing things all the time that's draining our energy. We're doing things all the time that are feeding our fears, and exacerbating our feelings of anxiety or depression or discouragement or whatever. I mean, all of this stuff. Our relationship skills, most of them suck.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially when you talk about deposits and withdrawals, most of us are just withdrawal makers. That's all we do.
And the,
treating everyone like ATMs.
We just take without even realizing it sometimes. Mm-hmm. We're so unaware of our own family dynamics. Like every relationship in the household is overdrawn,
exactly.
Bankrupt, and people are like, well, why is our family have so much tension? Like,
right.
Man, look around.
Well, and I think especially as a mom, it can be very easy to quickly overdraw on your kids because, you know, naturally we are often the managers of the home. And so there's a lot we're trying to make happen and get done. We don't want to just live in a pigsty or, you know, whatever. When we've got to make sure things happen and things get done and study, school, all of this stuff. And so as a result, we resort to methods that, in essence, make withdrawals. You know, we yell, we nag, we scream, we
spank, ground,
we whatever, you know, and I get why people do it. And I've done it before too. You get in the spot where you just feel like, I don't know what else to do. This is all I've got. I don't know how else to get cooperation here or how else to get help. And legitimately, I need help. I can't do it my own. So I understand. But ultimately, it's ineffective and it makes withdrawals so that you put strain on the relationship and it just deteriorates from there. So we have to use these different new methods in order to make deposits and even to get to the point where, you know, asking your kids to do something can, in essence, be a sort of deposit. For my son, well, actually for a bunch of my kids, my 9-year-old right now too, doing chores is almost a deposit, because what they do is they come to me and they say, Mom, can I do some chores so I can listen to music? Can I do some chores so I can listen to an audiobook? They actually ask me to do chores because that's the arrangement we have for them to be able to have more audiobook time or more music time. And these, you know, all of these things are things I teach in my 28-day challenge and my family charts and systems, but it's no longer a withdrawal. I don't have to get after my kids and yell or get angry. I don't have to get after them for doing their chores or their routines. You know, they get up, they do their studies, they do their morning routine, which means getting dressed, making their bed, cleaning up their room. Like, they have this whole list. I don't have to get after them about any of it. It's all a positive thing. It's something they choose to do.
They're very autonomous.
Yeah, they're totally autonomous, and it's all positive things. Yeah. And then they do their studies, and they, you know, they check it all off the list.
They ask me to do chores.
Yeah. So it's all deposits so far. No withdrawals. In fact, I would literally say this morning, I don't think there's been any withdrawals made. Maybe one with my son. But for the most part, all of these things are happening. The chores are getting done. The studies are getting done. The routines are getting done.
So all the things I want done are getting done,
and I've made no withdrawals.
Control is a human drive. We want to have control, and we want to have standards. We want to have things be nice. And so as a mom, you like, family life is chaotic. You got a lot of kids. There's a lot of chaos and mayhem.
There can be a lot of mess.
And so a mom's like, I want my life to be clean and neat, and my children to be well behaved. I want them to do their studies.
Clean up after themselves.
I want them to do chores and help out with everything that goes with running a household. You want to be a good household manager and leader. You want all these good things. But if you do not deliberately cultivate and develop the abilities to do it effectively, where it's all deposits, then it's just withdrawals.
Exactly.
And you do it because it gets a reaction. Like, people yell and spank and use those methods, and they, you know, they scream in the morning, get their kids out the door on time, whatever. And they're like, that worked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But in the long run,
kind of worked.
It's not working.
Right. Because ultimately, you get reactions instead of results.
Yes.
I like the distinction there. And so we can all ask ourselves, well, do you want results that are long lasting, or do you want reactions?
Yeah. Long lasting and actually building the relationships instead of tearing them down.
Yep.
Because ultimately, that is what we want. We want to get the results of the thing we want, but we also want to keep the relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's all built, ladies and gentlemen, on strategically developing the skills and abilities, which we like to refer to as the skillities. The skillities required as a human being, as a protector, a provider, a leader, as a man, as a woman, as a husband, a wife, as a father, a mother. It's developing those skills, which is exactly why you have the 28-Day Challenge coaching, why I do the Be the Man Masterclass and the coaching. Really, that's what we're doing. We're helping our clients deliberately build the skill set that makes all the difference. It becomes so formative.
If we could summarize in weight, is just the skill set of problem solving.
Yep.
You're learning everything you're confronting, you know, if you're making withdrawals.
Problem solving and
deposits,
problem preventing.
Yeah.
Which
is a form of problem solving ultimately, because once you get good at solving problems, then you learn how to prevent those problems even more. And so it starts. Yeah.
Yeah,
it becomes proactive,
more proactive. Like, you're solving a problem that hasn't yet happened, which is so rad.
Yes. And is the best way to do it ultimately.
So what are you going to do, listener, to deliberately cultivate the abilities and skills that will literally transform your family life and family legacy? It's worth all the effort and energy and thought and resources to be deliberate about skills and abilities that make all the difference. Love you guys. Thanks for listening. Peace out.